from the corner. Yes! And a foul!
Is he having himself an afternoon?
Schweider feeling his third three already.
On the drive goes Patty Casey for the basket.
Backdoor cut, Schweider with the jam. This is Schweider in close. And one.
Welcome back, Schweider Show listeners. We took a little two-week break for the holidays. Obviously, in this time, I'm fully back. Have played in about six games since last time we talked on the podcast. But it feels good to be back. Feels good to be back here with Patty, just chopping it up. Had a great interview with Elijah Hughes, and excited for you guys to listen to that. But Patty, how you been, man? How was your holidays?
I've been good. I haven't seen you since last year.
Typical one, too.
Classic. Yep. But my holidays were good. How were your holidays? You got to go home, didn't you?
Yeah, I got to go home for a couple of days. So I ended up getting called up in the Charlotte game. There was a point where I thought maybe I could check in there. But yeah. We lost a tough game against Charlotte. And then after that, I was able to go home. And it was home for a couple of days. Then we went out to Memphis and played against the Memphis Hustle.
Mm-hmm. How are you feeling being back on the court and everything?
Man, it's been a process. I think my first game I played well. My second game, kind of getting back into the rhythm. I told my dad this the other day. It's just like you're looking forward to coming back, and you know it's going to be tough, but it's not fun while you're just getting back into it. I'm still on a minute restriction, still working my way back into things. So I have an MRI Thursday to kind of take me off the minute restriction if everything goes well. After that, but I think I've been catching my rhythm as of late. I think the last two games I played well.
Absolutely.
And yeah, man, I'm just excited. I'm getting going and obviously just chipping at it day by day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, last game 14 on the Memphis Herd. That's really, yeah. We should actually, one of our drafts, we should do names of G League teams because some of them are just like pretty electric. But oh. Yeah, you look like you're getting your legs under you. You look like you're, I mean, the jumper never leaves, but. Since we last spoke, you first of all made your debut against the Ontario Clippers. It would not be, I don't think the Lakers or the Clippers would be in that G League draft because it's, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
She's using the same name. But, yep. Yeah, can you just kind of take us through that first game back? Because we haven't spoken since.
Yeah. No, it was, we actually, Ontario's like 45 minutes away. And, it's funny, man, just going up to Ontario, it's not a, great, I would say a great city. The arena's not that nice. I mean, the G League's one of a kind, man. It's so funny. At all these different arenas, they have like all these. For example, like they have all these DJs and these guys are talking on the mics and stuff like that. It's hilarious. But then we go to Memphis, and it was bring your dog to the arena day.
Yeah, it was like chaos.
Yeah,
and I don't know how that's allowed.
Scotty's shooting a free throw. There's dogs barking in the background. Like, I don't know if they played that noise that no one can hear, and the dogs, like, you know what I mean? The dogs are getting all irritated. Yeah. But yeah, so just like the G League just is funny. So, like, we're playing against the Clippers, and yeah, it felt great. I got all my warm ups in and went in there and played well. I got 9 rebounds and kind of got myself going. And then we handled business. They had all their guys up with the NBA team, so we played a lot of like their main G League players, so it was a good win there. And kind of after that, just been trying to find my rhythm. After that, had a tough one against Stockton, but I think I've been kind of catching my feet underneath me, and I'm getting better every single day, and I feel more like myself. So, but yeah, now the G League's funny, man. Like one of our guys like dunked the ball, and it was like Jay Huff for the dunk, boo.
Oh, like over the last PA guy said that? Oh, that's actually awesome.
Yeah, literally the DJ. Like, because the DJ is the PA guy there. It was hilarious.
Yeah, some of the, like, the Ontario place is massive, too. And no offense, the clock, the stands were, like, not necessarily full. So it's, like, makes it look so empty.
It's funny, because that's actually a pretty good crowd for the G League. There's probably 1,000 people there in, like, 8,000.
But the arena's giant, yeah. Yeah, so I like probably, your guys' setup, how it's, like, a smaller gym, like it looks cooler. It's probably better for a shooter too.
Oh, great shooting gym too. Yeah, yeah. No, it's I like our setup too because we practice in the Lakes facility. Everything's right there, so I can be back and forth and not even miss a beat.
Yeah, actually, real quick, now that you mentioned that, I've gotten some questions from like friends and family about the location of where you guys play. So do you play your G League games at the practice facility?
Yeah, so that's one of the best parts about being, like, I think the mm-hmm. Wizards have this, and I know Detroit buddy practices at the practice facility, but they play at Wayne State, which is down the street. Yeah. But for us, we play in the same gym that we practice in, and it's connected to the Lakers court right. on the right side, our court on the left side, and yeah, it's really convenient. So we literally play in the practice facility. So
okay. So how far convenient. Is the practice facility from, like, Crypto, like, downtown LA?
30 minutes. Yeah.
That's not bad. That's pretty interesting. And
Yeah,
that's not the worst setup to, one, practice or play where you practice every day, and two, have it be as nice as that place. So
it's really nice. Really nice, man.
Also related to that, the G League showcase took place. That was kind of the same type of setup when talking about arenas. But you guys lost a tough one first game. But you played pretty well. Like you said, minutes restriction is pretty tough. So, yeah, just kind of speak to that experience. How was your first G League showcase?
Yeah, man, it was a good experience. It's cool seeing all the GMs there and everyone. It's like kind of like being in like the summer league atmosphere again, right? I think the tough part about that, and I talked to this with Coach Miles Simon, my G League coach, about this too, is that like my team's been a good team this whole entire time, so they don't necessarily need me. They didn't necessarily need me in those games, right? So I'm trying to catch my rhythm. I'm trying to get back and everything like that. And they're competing for $100,000, right? So, like, I think I was playing well. I was doing all the right things. And Miles even told me, he's like, hey, you were playing well. It's just like, first of all, we didn't know about the Elam ending. So the G League Showcase, the fourth quarter, it's just plus 25 on whoever the lead is. So I ended up playing the end of the third quarter, and we didn't know that to begin with. And in the G League and the NBA, all the minutes are dispersed before the game even starts. So, like, for me, I was scheduled to play 22 minutes, but then we had the Elam ending. So, like, that just totally throws off, and we didn't know that. So, whatever, throughout the game, I'm playing well. I'm starting to catch my rhythm, and the whole entire Elam ending, he put the starters back in, which I totally get. Like, I told him, I was like, I'm not mad that you did that, because I understand as a coach, I'm going with the guys who have been with me the whole entire season, who I know, who have closed out games, who have done all these things. Not saying that I'm necessarily happy about it, but I totally understand where he was coming from, right? So, I think overall the minute restriction has really helped me just realize, like, hey, like, I'll probably play 22 minutes if I'm up with the Lakers, or I'll play less than that. I'll play 15 or 20, and that's what I'm going to have to do when I start out my NBA career. So it's kind of picking your spots, realizing where you can get your shots, and then coming into a team where you get traded mid-year, and like, it's a similar situation. Like, the team hasn't, I haven't played with the team yet, so it's kind of getting comfortable, kind of realizing where these guys' spots are, where my spots are, and it's been a really good transition from not playing to playing, and I think I've just gotten better every single game, and these guys are six games in now. I had my best game in this past game, and I think it's all starting to be on the up and up, and I'm excited. I think I'm in a good, we're in a good part of our season now, where hopefully I get this minute restriction off on Thursday, and we can go from there.
Yeah, how does that work with the minute restriction as far as the MRI? Like, if it comes back with what you're looking for, then, and is it just full go?
Yeah, so, I mean, the conversation that we've had with our medical team and doctors is that they just don't want to see, like, a drastic setback in terms of what the MRI shows. Like, we talked about this from the beginning. I haven't had any pain this whole entire time, so it's been tough from my perspective, being like, oh, like, now it's worse, now it's better, like, and I don't understand that because of my pain level, right? You're coming back from a certain injury. Like, I was talking to Colin today, Colin Gillespie, friend of the pod. Yep.
Great
guy, and he was saying, like, yeah, man, like, it's some days I feel really good, some days I don't, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's getting back into that everyday routine. Like, for me, like, I've felt good every single day, you know what I mean? Just coming back. So it's been one of those things that they just want to see either a positive progression or stay the same. So they know that the things that I'm doing has been benefiting me, and I'm not putting myself in harm's way to get a stress fracture.
Right. Speaking of friends of the pod and the G League showcase, I think we should shout out Buddy, who had 5 threes in the Motor City Pistons first, or Motor City Crews, excuse me, their game at the showcase. So good work, Bud. Got hot.
Yeah, Buddy played great. Mm-hmm. Buddy played great. I was actually at that game sitting next to Elijah and another Syracuse, former Syracuse player, Kai Feldman.
Oh, so, yeah.
Just orange representing.
Also walk out.
Yep, yeah. D. Nick was there. Jason Hart,
wow.
The head coach of G League Ignite. Hakeem Warwick.
Yep.
Arenze Onowaku was there. He's the assistant coach for the Capital City Go-Go. So we had a good orange presence at the G League Showcase, and it was good to see all those guys.
Yeah, Buddy played very well. But I feel like we say that every episode. You're just running into Q's people all over the place.
It's great, man. I mean,
the presence is strong because there's so many guys within the league, but...
Yeah, and it's cool because we've all played for the same coach, right?
Yeah,
like all these guys. So like we're all watching the games. We're all looking for Coach Boeheim. We're all looking, you know what I mean? Like there's like this familiarity with all these guys. Where at some programs, it's like, all right, this guy, like for Scotty, for example, there's like probably 6 or 7 guys from Vanderbilt in the NBA, but they all play for different coaches, right? Yeah. Some guys played for. What's his name? The guy who was at Pittsburgh after he left. Some guys played for Bryce Drew. Some guys played mm-hmm. for Stackhouse. You know what I mean? Some guys played for both. Some guys played for the guy before them. So it's great. It's just great having that connection with all these guys. And everyone knows what you go through as a Syracuse basketball player. The good, the bad, the media, yeah. Everything like that. So there's that, is that brotherhood and that connection with all these Syracuse guys.
Yeah, it's insanely unique and... Coach Bam's gotten a lot of deserved love on this podcast. He also will on the interview with Elijah, so definitely tune into that. But last episode, we actually forgot to do a mailbag question of the week, I believe. Yeah, I think we did because we got too excited with the draft, which Swider won. I'll withhold my comments on that. Thanks to everyone who voted, but it seemed like it might have been a popularity contest, Swider, with you winning.
Like riding a bike. Like riding a bike.
Daddy's Home too is arguably, I mean, that's like Anthony Bennett. But whatever, we'll have more drafts in the future. I think I like my chances to bounce back. Lewis and Adam and Sheridan did well too. But like I said, mailbag question of the week last week, we missed it. This week, we have a question from Peter. Thank you, Peter, for sending it in. Like I say every week, send to swidershow@gmail.com to get featured on the show. But Swider, I feel like this is very relevant because there's been a lot of chatter, a lot of big stat lines around the NBA recently, a lot of MVP talk with it being like 35 games into the season. So he asked Swider, with you being in the shoes of an NBA player right now, who would you say has stood out in the MVP race?
Man, I think there's been so many good performances this year, mm-hmm. in great seasons. Obviously, there's the Giannis, there's the Jokic, there's Luka, there's all those top guys, but then there's guys like, I mean, I'm biased, but Anthony Davis.
Yeah, he
ends up getting hurt, mm-hmm. but is he in the MVP conversation if he's healthy?
Yeah.
The way LeBron's been playing the past couple of weeks, it's like there's so many, and then KD's been playing great. KD's shooting an all-time high field goal percentage, and they're on an 11-game win streak. So, I don't know, the NBA is so good, it's so talented, like... Zion and Ja Morant are leading their teams to great seasons. Are they in the conversation? So, yeah. I think it's tough, man. But I mean, looking at it from this perspective, I would definitely say, Luka. The way Luka's been playing these past couple of weeks, and just the team that he has around him, just keeping them relevant. It's always hard to win MVP when your team's not a top 2 seed, top 3 seed, but. Just what the amount of load that he has on his back every single game is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Pause.
But yeah, I mean, his stat lines the last week or two have been just like jarring. Like the 60, 21, 10, and then last night he had 50 again. Or 2 nights ago, New Year's Eve. But
yeah. I think one of the best quotes of the NBA season is that Greg Popovich was like, "Yeah, we're going to try and keep him under 50.
Yeah.
and he has 51.
It's like all you could do, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he plays is, like, mesmerizing to watch, too. Jokic, I don't want Jokic to win it three times in a row, but he's like getting to the point where you can't really deny him being in the conversation. But
yeah, the NBA won't let that happen though.
Yeah, it hasn't happened since Bird. I don't think it'll happen again. You'd probably have to average like 40, 15, and 10 to be in, like legitimate. But there's no one on the Celtics in that conversation, so I don't know why Adam's looking at us, but
I forgot. You gotta give Jason Tatum his props. Yeah,
Tatum in there, I guess. But
yeah.
But yeah, the other weekly occurrence, Sheridan, I think, has a stat of the week. We'll see how relevant this is to the show. However, Sheridan, take it away. Let's hear what you got.
First off, just want to say I hope everyone had a happy holidays and everything. Speaking of the holidays, Christmas Day, basketball. It was jam-packed, especially ending with that overtime thriller between Phoenix and Denver. But we're going to take it to a LeBron stat line here, and then I'll dig a little deeper. But he went for 38-6-5 on Christmas Day, and he also played in his 17th game, which surpassed Kobe Bryant for the most Christmas Day games played in NBA history. And throughout his career on Christmas Day, the King averages 27.1 points per game. So I feel like he can be named one of the greatest Christmas Day players of all time, if not the greatest, for how long he's been ventured in the league.
That was great.
Yeah, that was a great stat. Yeah, LeBron on Christmas. That was pretty cool, the mic'd up thing of him talking to his family.
Yeah, for sure, man. And if we're going to talk about LeBron, we can't not talk about
the Christmas Day performance, or the birthday performance, I mean.
So that would be good for any player, yeah. But being 38,
yeah,
on your 38th birthday, to have 47, 10-9, and lead your team to a victory over a pretty good Hawks team.
Yeah.
Pretty good Hawks team. That was just unbelievable to watch. So I wasn't at the game. Wish I was at the game. Mm-hmm. But just watching from afar, watching it, seeing the stat line after our game that we played against the Hustle, it's just wow.
Yeah. I mean, wow. That's all you can say. But, yeah, it's getting like – it's almost getting too normal at this point with the longevity between him and Brady. But what they're doing is just not a normal thing. And I don't know. That was the other stat of the week that I had in my head, not to show up Sheridan, but Swan, I don't know if you saw the graphic of on his 25th birthday. I think he had 48, 7, and 8, something like that. And then 13 years later to the day, he has 47, 9, and 10. And a W, so yeah, it's just like insane.
It's laughable. It's laughable.
It is laughable. I'm not laughing, but I might be laughing. You'll have to tune into the TikTok to find out if I'm laughing. How about that plug, Adam?
Look at that.
But yeah, so are there anything you want to hit around the league, around college basketball, around Cuse, anything?
Yeah, just shout out to Syracuse, really good win against Boston College last week, What was that? 2 days ago? Saturday? Ago, yeah.
They've only had one game, I think, since we last recorded, which was that game. So,
yeah, so shout out to the fellas. I think they're getting better and better every single game. Benny had a great game. Yep. So just hopefully continue to build off of that. Play a really good Virginia team on the road. I never got to play there at Virginia, so it's definitely going to be a tough matchup, especially with how good their team is.
Yeah, they're super good. They play Louisville tomorrow at the time of recording this Tuesday. But, yeah, that shouldn't be too tough of a game. No offense to the Cardinals. But, I mean, they still are an ACC team, so you can see.
All right, cool. Follow us on all platforms at The Sweater Show. Email us. Patty obviously talks about the mailbag every single week. So email us your mailbag questions, sweatershow@gmail.com. And, yeah, man, super excited. Enter 2023. And get back hopefully up with the NBA squad soon. So, really look forward to you guys listening to this interview with Elijah Hughes, Syracuse great, NBA player. Excited to introduce Elijah Hughes. Speaking of having Elijah on our podcast, Elijah's actually having his own podcast. Elijah, talk about that and why you want to get in the podcast game.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. I like to talk, bro. I like talking. I be chatting. But nah, it's what I want. What I'm starting is called In the Water, and it's basically highlighting people from where I'm from, Hudson Valley area, that kind of don't get enough credit for what they do is because it's a small area and a lot of people from my area don't get a lot of credit for what they do. And so it's really cool. You know, we're focused on a lot of people in the fashion world, music world, industry and basketball world, sports world in general. We got a lot of cool guests lined up for people to kind of hear their story, just kind of being from where we're all from. That's why, you know, the name of it is kind of In the Water, because it's kind of in the water we drink. This kind of cool little gig I got going on, and I'm really excited for our first couple episodes dropping soon.
Yeah, man. Shout out to In the Water podcast coming out. It said in 2023, so I don't know when the first episode is coming out, but everyone go tune in, and obviously we'll be listening and rooting on that podcast as well, man.
Appreciate you, bro.
And honestly, just a pleasure to have you on the podcast, man. First of all, how you doing, man?
I'm good, bro. I'm good. I'm chilling right now, just enjoying myself. I'm just happy I'm playing with the Wisconsin Herd. Sorry, had a rough start, but we're starting to figure it out. We got two good wins in Vegas, first win in the new year, so we're starting to roll in the right direction.
For sure, man. I already know how the G League is, man. I mean, Patty works at 9 to 5, so he doesn't really understand. But
I wish
he plays in the Tuesday night men's league. But
yeah, it's basically the same level of competition. Basically, I mean, it's high level basketball players. But yeah, just before we get it going, appreciate you coming on. We realize how busy your schedule's been, so. Especially with the holidays and everything, so yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I saw Cole. You posted something about this like a minute ago. I was like, I definitely want to jump on the episode.
Yeah, actually, before I wanted to say that first, I think you were the first person to reach out to us to come on the pod. Like you commented and said like whenever you want, I'm on the pod. Usually we're the ones reaching out to. It's usually Cole. I think I've gotten one or two guests, but yeah, no, that made our lives way easier. So we appreciate it.
Yeah, this is fun.
Yeah, nah, for sure, man. But first off, Elijah, obviously you've had a decorated career. Obviously, talk about where that love for basketball kind of started. Is that in your hometown? Kind of just talk about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I started playing basketball very young. My dad put the ball in my hands from when I was 4 or 5. I played other sports growing up, soccer. I was a big soccer guy. Try football, that was my thing. But basketball always kind of stuck. And then I started to grow, so you know that kind of went hand in hand. I started getting better, and I was the love for it started from when I first touched it. And I knew that was the sport I wanted to play, and it's been a nonstop love since.
Yeah. So in researching for the episode, I found it pretty unique. You went to 3 high schools, right, and played 3 different places. So that's definitely a unique journey, and it seems like you said you kind of grew a little bit, and there's definitely a steady progression from. When you were a freshman, even to take it through, you know, your last year at Cuse, it's like every single year you got way, way better. And it seemed like there was a jump in competition with each place and each destination that you kind of switched to. So kind of talk about how that, like, helped your development, because I'm sure, you know, it socially it's really hard to go from play, like anyone who's transferred schools or gone to different places. It's so tough. But when you also factor in, like, a jump in basketball, kind of how did that sort of shape how – you know, to get where you've gone to today, and specifically throughout your high school career.
Right. I would just lead that all back to my competitiveness. Even, like, growing up in Beacon, there was just so many good basketball players, so many guys that, like, in the park would just kill, and, like, I always wanted to just get better. Like, I always wanted to be one of the better guys in this area. And that kind of just grew into high school. You know, I just want to keep getting better, make sure I'm getting better, not taking steps back, always just steps forward the best way I possibly could, so. And that's just from me wanting to be one of the best. That's just my competitiveness. That's just I'm just gonna carry that the rest of my life. Just trying to always be better. You know, I got it tatted on me, man.
I feel like everyone who's made it to this level or made it to a successful level. I mean, you have to be competitive, but to make it into the NBA, it's like, what are you doing that no one else is doing? What's your edge? What's your like? Everyone's been through that tough part. So, obviously. You went to South Kent for your senior year, or was that a post-grad year?
Yeah, it was just my senior year, yeah.
So I played at St. Andrews. We played in the same conference. Yeah. We never played you guys, but you played with Tremont Waters, Miles Powell, another guy who went to Syracuse, Matt Moyer. Talk about that level up in competition, going to the NEPSAC, and how did that prepare you for your freshman year at East Carolina?
Right. So, I'm going to start from the jump. From the jump from Kennedy Catholic, my junior year as a junior to South Kent was just a huge, just like, all right, this is a whole new ball game now. Because, you know, I played with a lot of great players at Kennedy Catholic, some pros. But just the level of, at the time, basketball being played, it was just a way different level. You know, our open gyms was like Coach Cal showing up, Coach K is showing up, Tony Bennett, did right, like, to our open gyms in September.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, like this is big time. Like, this is like, so it was just a big jump in that way. And then also I taught me how to work hard. And that was my first time living alone by myself. So I was just kind of just me, basketball and school. That's all it was. It's South Kent in the middle of nowhere. Like most MEPSAC schools, it's kind of stored away somewhere. And it's kind of just a, you know, lock-in kind of environment. But so it was a really hard jump at first. But then I started to figure out, you know, where I can kind of fit in on that team with, you know, Tremont Waters, Miles Powell, Matt Moyer, who was Gatorade Player of the Year. So I kind of figured out I can squeeze in and be a good player on that team. And it all worked out. It all worked out. It was one of the best. It probably was my best high school year, just in terms of, like, how I felt, how I was moving. Like, I was ready to take the next step. And then going to ECU, I felt really good. I was ready. But I got hurt midway through my freshman year. And that kind of, you know, set me a little further back. You know, we also had a coaching change in the middle of the season. So it was just a lot of instability at ECU. I just felt like it was the right time to make a move, and I just chose Syracuse.
Real quick, I had a question for both of you guys, with you being in South Kent, Swire, you being at St. Andrews. You know, Swire mentioned the pedigree at South Kent. Like, some guys that play there, Isaiah Thomas, like Celtics Isaiah Thomas, lefty Isaiah Thomas, not old school Isaiah Thomas, but Mo Harkless. You mentioned, like, playing with Tremont Waters, Miles Powell. How much motivation? Because when I hear that, I played at my local high school. We were very good in the area, but, you know, we didn't have, like, the NBA players coming down the pipeline, like, when I was growing up. So how much motivation is it for you two to kind of be that next guy? Because I'm sure there's so many players on your team that you're looking up to them as a blueprint, and you're like, I want to be like that. Like, I want to be the next, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Darrell Wright, Mo Harkless, Swatter. You're looking at D-Nick, Michael Carter-Williams. You know, that's such a unique experience for a basketball player. So how does that kind of shape how you guys, your work ethic, you know, how you look at it and follow that blueprint of what those guys laid out for you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the blueprint is funny. I mean, the blueprint for me was St. Andrews, go to Syracuse, then be an NBA draft pick. But I kind of went away from that blueprint. We had another NBA guy, Bonzi Colson. Elijah, you definitely played against him at mm-hmm. Cuse. Yeah, so we – okay. Yeah. So Bonzi's another one of those guys, like – Syracuse didn't recruit him, so he went to Notre Dame. But, like, Coach Hart has had all these great players over the year. Rakim Sanders, who plays in EuroLeague, and all these great guys. And I think for me, it was such a bonus for me to go to that kind of school, because I know that this is a place where he can develop pros, where this coach has seen what it takes to get to that level. I mean, in my town, the only person who I ever saw make it was Andrew Shravitz, and he played at Butler. Mm-hmm. Was there for four years, and then he played overseas for a couple of years. But going to St. Andrews, it's like it opened up a whole entire new door for me, and it was only 30 minutes away from my house. So it was amazing just to go there. And then on my team, we had 7 Division I players. So you go from, Elijah, you know this, a small high school where you're the best player and everything like that, to now you're going against 7 Division I players every single day.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree, man. It was just like, you just had to be able to take that step, because, like, you're not the man again anymore, pretty much. It's like, you got eight, nine guys who are a man. And it's like, 2 of them guys in your position. So it's just like it's crazy. It's really crazy. So, yeah, I mean, my time in South Kent, like, yeah, you look up and see, like, Isaiah Thomas, Darrell Wright, Deion Wade, all these dudes' names up there. And it's like, wow, I want to be there one day. Like, what do I got to do to be there? And this guy, Calvin Jefferson, my coach at the time, knew exactly what it was. And he kind of put me in that position, put me in a really good position on that team. So I think that's when the NBA started looking a little bit, to be honest with you. When I started at South Kent.
So, yeah, talking about that last year at South Kent, you played really well. And, I mean, from a NEPSAC standpoint, I mean, I thought you were one of the best players in the league that year. And when you're one of the best players in the NEPSAC, it's talking about high majors. You're talking about, like, the Syracuse, the Dukes, the Villanovas, all the top players are going there. But you end up committing to ECU. Talk about that decision to go there. Talk about your other offers, the other schools that you went to, the other schools that you visited, and what ultimately made you go to ECU. Because Coach Boeheim has an hilarious story Or Red has an hilarious story, but I'll tell that after.
Well, I'm gonna ask you. It was before I got to South Kent. I was already committed and signed to ECU. So I was committed to ECU. Yeah, mm-hmm. My junior year of high school, when I was still like middle of the season. And honestly, bro, like there wasn't a lot of schools calling because I'm gonna be honest too. I didn't have the grades for it. My grades weren't where it needed to be. So, like a lot of schools were kind of shying away. But I got my act together. Got my grades all where they need to be. But so yeah, there wasn't a lot of schools recruiting me to begin with. Iona was heavy in the mix, Seton Hall in the mix. Most of the MAC schools, a little bit of Big East, but like, it wasn't like heavy real recruitment because of, you know, how my grades were looking. So yeah, once ECU called, they showed a lot of love, a lot of loyalty. I went there on a visit. I was, you know what? They like me, I'm just gonna commit here, like just focus on getting my grades up now and then being able to, you know, go there and play. So I was committed and signed. I just wanted to stay true. But, you know, I almost tried to reopen my recruitment back up after South Kent because that kind of, like, helped me realize that, yo, like, I just, like, what, second team on NEPSAC, like, in this league with these guys, like, schools are going to be calling. Like, schools are going to be called. And my grades were where they needed to be at this time as well. So I thought about it. I wanted to at a few points, but, no, I kind of just wanted to stick it out, just – go give it a shot, and it wasn't what I wanted it to be, so that was the end of that.
Who are some of those guys that were in the NEPSAC your year? Because we've mentioned that in a lot of episodes. Yeah.
Well, we St. Thomas More, they had Amari Spellman, Christian Patel. Well, Brewster Academy was Torian Thompson, Alpha Diallo, CJ Kaiser.
Bruce Brown was in the league that year.
Yeah, he was
at Vermont. He was. Who was? Kelly, what's his name? Northfield Mount Hermon was like.
Kellen Grady.
Oh, yeah.
AJ Brodeur.
Yeah. Just because I want to get that in because I feel like we mentioned that in a lot of episodes and kind of just like gloss over the league. Nate, but like there's legitimate. It's like a college basketball.
It's loaded. It's unbelievable. Like, loaded. Yeah. And like all of our games, like if we're playing Northfield, it's like Coach K, Coach. It's just like that's regular. Yeah. They're all there. Like that's regular. It's wild. And then the national prep showcase, another just unbelievable event to have in Connecticut. That's when I started. I wanted to think about like opening up my recruitment again because a lot of like schools were talking to my coach. I thought, Kent, like, yeah, listen, like, what is this guy like? We can get this guy. Like, why can't we just get him out? And then that's just how it happened. But I'm happy how everything worked out.
Yeah. Definitely.
So Red tells this story all the time, man. He said that you used to go to Syracuse basketball camp as just like a regular camper, right? So they said they got you up there when you were a sophomore or junior, right?
I think I was a sophomore going to my junior year. I was still young yet.
Tell the story, man. Red tells it all the time. Yeah.
So I used to go to the Syracuse, like I actually went to it once, but the Syracuse like kids camp, like for the week. Like, the kids go up, they stay in the dorms and they go play basketball day, have lunch. It's like the actual kids' sleepaway camp. I remember being there with Buddy, Adrian, a few other Syracuse guys. And I remember, like, I was just killing, bro. I was killing. I was averaging, like, 39 a game, like, killing. And then Kip Wellman, the Dobo at the time at Syracuse, and Coach Red, because Kip ran to Kemp. So Kip went to Red, like, yo, Red, you got to come watch this kid. Like, you got to come see this kid. So Red comes one day. Today, like, I'm killing, like I'm dunking on dudes, and like I'm still like a pretty young kid, and I think later that like the camp was over on a Friday, but the elite camp were all like the top dogs that came in was it following day or following next day, so I stayed with my high school coach at my high school coach friend's house that night, and I'll call my mom real quick. I say, Mom, they invited me to elite camp. They wanted me to come to elite camp. So my mom was like, all right, sure, yeah, stay up there. So stayed up there, went to elite camp. Killed at the elite camp, like was killing everybody at the elite camp, and then that's kind of how it started. But nothing really happened after that because I think at the time the scholarship issues, they didn't have enough scholarships or X amount of guys were committed. I don't really remember, but that's kind of like that's where it stopped for a little bit. And then Coach Boeheim saw me again. Coach Boeheim like was really intrigued from that day, but he saw me again in Binghamton in like a little state New York tournament that they have in the summertime, and then that's kind of we call Red again. But I was already committed to ECU, so it's just that story is funny. I like telling that story a lot.
It's funny because Red talks about how you were committed to ECU, and Coach Boeheim's like, why weren't we on this kid? And Red's like, we literally had him at elite camp. But it's funny because I have a similar story. I think I've told this story on the podcast before, but it relates to this. So I went up to Syracuse my sophomore year for elite camp, and that time Mike Hopkins was going to take over as the head coach. So Hop had this rule that he needed to see you like three times or something like that. And I went up there and I was killing. Like GMAC brought me around campus. Coach Boeheim loved me, but he couldn't offer me because it wasn't going to be his team anymore. So Isaiah Stewart's there. They have like literally Quad A Green, Mo Bamba, like all those guys there. I'm killing. And after the camp, Mike Hopkins comes up to Isaiah. Me and Isaiah Stewart standing next to each other, and he comes up to Isaiah Stewart. He's like, "Hey, we're going to offer you a scholarship." And then he's like, "Cole, we'll get you up on an unofficial visit." So I'm sitting here like, "There's no way that just happened." And then Red gets all mad about it at GMAC because later, next thing you know, Hop takes the Washington job. GMAC Hop ended up offering me later that my season. But yeah, man, it was and I love Syracuse. It's crazy, man.
The best 3 years of my life, man. Yeah. The best 3 years of my life.
That's actually my next question is like perfectly related to what we're gonna say. So, or what you guys are saying right now. There's a quote when you committed, when you transferred, that you went on a visit like one day, and then I think it was the next day or 2 days later that you committed, and someone, probably Mike Waters called you up and like asked you about the commitment and everything. And your quote was, "I was thinking about what I like." Not basically, you said you were thinking about what you did like about Syracuse, but then you thought about what you didn't like, and you were basically like, "I don't think there's anything I don't like about this place. Like, this seems like a perfect opportunity for me." Me and Swider, the listeners are no stranger that we completely agree with that line of thinking. So, what kind of happened on that visit, and what was the feeling you got when you met with the coaching staff when you were at the campus that you were like, "Nah, this is it. Like, this is a done deal. I want to come here."
Yeah, so I like telling the story too. Shaheen Holloway was at Seton Hall at the time, and it was like when I was done with ECU, I was like, "All right, call up Shaheen. Like, I'm coming. Like, I'm coming." I was pretty much, "I'm coming." And then Coach Red called me later that night and said, "Coach Bam is going to come on a visit. So like, all right, so now I got to call Shaheen back. Like, "Hold up, I'm about to go to Syracuse. Like, look at it real quick, and I'll let you know." And so I went to Syracuse, and Coach kind of – I like Coach because he was just straight up. He told me what it was. Yep. He was like, "Listen."
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was different for me because, like, I didn't need the whole, like, go visit, go out. I was, like, going to my – I saw Rhea. Like, I just want to focus on, like, what's the best situation for me basketball-wise. Mm-hmm. And he just told me what it was. Told me the plans. He had the plan and vision for Tyus. He had the plan and vision for O'Shea. He had the plan and vision for me. And they kind of all just went hand in hand, and I'll just say, you know what? Like, I looked at my mom, dad. I was like, "What are we?" On the ride back home, I was like, "Dad, like, I'm going. Like, I'm not like." Yeah. So I called Shaheen back in the car leaving Syracuse, and I called Coach Boeheim next morning, and then I was just done. I was ready to go.
I think Coach Boeheim, more than any coach I've ever been around, is like, he'll tell you exactly what it is, and then it turns out being exactly what he said it was. Like, I don't know how it feels to be a player who doesn't, like, where that doesn't happen, but I've never met a player. I remember I was on my recruiting visit, and Matt Moore, I was telling Matt Moore, I was like, "Hey, like, is this normal? Like, Coach just told me if I came to Syracuse as a freshman, I'm going to get 400 shots. Like, did he tell you that?" Because I just want to make sure that he's not lying to me. He's like, "No, like, Coach told me that, like, I'll be lucky if I play as a junior." I'm like, and I'm like, "Oh, shoot."
Coach would tell you what it is. He watches a lot of basketball. He loves basketball. So, like, he knows basketball. He knows what works. Like, he knows what kind of guy he needs. Like, he's just the guru. I think he's a guru.
Unbelievable. Then he lets – and one thing I tell people is that someone asked me, "Who's the best offensive coach you've ever played for?" They asked me that yesterday. And I was thinking about it, and I think Coach Wright, unbelievable defensively. But when it comes to, like, adjusting to who you have on your roster, Patty knows this. Last year, we probably took around 40 threes a game. And this year, they take around, like, 12 threes a game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he's able to adjust each and every year to the roster that he has. Talk about – yeah. I mean, I just think that Coach Boeheim's just unbelievable in that aspect. But going back, so now you transfer to Syracuse – and you have to sit out that year. Talk about that year that you had to sit out and how much that helped you develop your game and become the player that you wanted to become.
Right. Bro, I'm not going to lie. That shit. Oh,
Yeah, you're allowed.
You can curse it.
That was awful, bro. And sitting out here, that was terrible. Because, like, me just going back to just being a straight-up competitor, like, that summer when I was going into my sit-out year, I was killing. Like, I'm in preseason. Like, I'm like, yeah, like, this is great. Like, I'm killing, like. But I'm like, damn, I'm about to go a whole season without playing. So it was kind of like that summer was kind of like the, all right, like I was focused, but I was like, all right, like, come on. I got a whole mad long before I ever get on the court again to play 5-on-5. So I kind of like, I was kind of taking it lightly that summer. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't like going crazy because I knew I had a whole forever to get ready. So, but yeah, sitting out was awful. It was awful. It was really bad because a lot of the games we would lose by like, 8 or 9 points. And so I'm not acting like I'm going to go in there and be the savior and have those 8 or 9 points. I'm just saying, like, it was just, I know what I'm capable of doing, and these guys know what I'm capable of doing. So with a little bit more, we could have just been so much more. So it was just, they lost to Duke that year in the Sweet 16. And it's like, I know that just probably with one more offensive weapon, we'd have went to the Final Four easily. We went to the Final Four. So that was rough. It was hard. Like, I felt bad. I just felt bad. We battled every day. Those are my guys. So it was tough. But I really just took the year to just kind of focus. And just focus on my body, take care of my body. Again, I was coming off injury my freshman year, so I had a little more time to get 100% back in shape, get my body feeling 100% right, no lingering, nothing like that. So that was good. And me and G-Mac got after it. Like, we just got after it that summer. 6 a.m., like, we just got after it. And it was good for me. It got me ready.
Going into that year, the first year you played, do you feel like you sort of caught some people by surprise because you come on this roster that's like already loaded. You guys had Tyus, O'Shea, Frank Howard. Like, you guys had so much talent. So, and then you end up being the second leading scorer. I'm sure, you know, there's definitely some Cuse fans that weren't necessarily familiar with your game. So do you kind of have a chip on your shoulder going into that year being like, now, like you said, we lost by 8 or 9 points like last year, like that isn't happening this year because I'm getting like 14 a game.
Right. I mean, that's a good one. I went into the year, I was just excited. I was like, I didn't play basketball, and I was just happy to play again. But there was definitely, that's competitive to me. I'm always have that kind of chip. Like, listen, like, I'm here to help you guys. I'm here to help what we had last year. I'm just trying to add. And so it was different because that year was kind of like my spot-up year. Like, I was kind of the spot-up guy. I took pressure off guys like Tyus and Frank. I made shots at a pretty solid clip. But I wasn't really playing in the paint. Like, I didn't get to the paint at all. I'm not going to say at all, but I rarely got to the paint my first year. So, I mean, the way I look at it, like, looking back on it, if I would have, like, kept that as my game, as my kind of – maybe things could be different the way I play in the NBA now. You know, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Just because of the way I was playing. I was kind of this floor spacer, a guy who could play up a closeout. I don't need the ball to be effective kind of guy, but I was effective when I had the ball. So it was just that kind of aspect, you know, that's kind of the NBA. That's what the NBA is. That's how it's played, the pace and guys. So that year was fun. We won a lot of games, and it was a really fun year. I missed that. I missed that shit, bro.
Once you play for Coach Boeheim and play in the Dome, and then you play for Syracuse, it's so hard to like get yourself back down. Like, all right, like, now I gotta start over. Like, now I gotta go on a 60-win Utah Jazz team and try and. Yeah. but then that next year, you have your coming out party, right? You get the AC scoring title. Talk about that summer leading into that year. What did you expect? What was Coach Boeheim telling you? And kind of walk us through the day to day of that year and how you kind of just evolved into the Elijah Hughes that all the Syracuse fans love.
I mean, it was simple because after my first year playing, we have our kind of end of the year meeting. Coach is like, "Yo, it's like it's your world now." Like, it just kind of like it's your world. So going into that year, we had like a little the foreign trip. We went to Italy. And I remember the first game, I was shooting some bullshit. Like, I was taking pull ups, step back, like threes. Like, I was shooting some shit, and like, it wasn't like all terrible awful shots, but shots that I know if I took last year, I'm on the bench. Like, if I took same shots last year, I'm on the bench. And so once I like saw Coach was kind of not saying nothing about that first game, I was like, all right, I know what it is now. Like, I could just, time to like let loose. I'm just hooping now. And that's what it was. I was just hooping. And me and G-Man got out there because I kind of had to get back to playing with the ball man again. I had to get back to handling the ball, being somebody who can make plays off the bounce and the shot clock, that kind of guy. So we got out there that summer, and it was just a great year. And then obviously COVID, you know, cut things short. But I think we were on our way to making a big-time run.
Yeah, it was a classic Houston March run that was kind of loading, and then it got shut off. But
I thought that.
What were you going to say, Swatter?
Yeah, before we get into the NBA stuff, talk about, I mean, Patty and I have the most appreciation for this guy. I think anyone could, but talk about the relationship that you have with G-Mac, how much he helped you in those years. And I tell him all the time, I'm just so thankful that he took me underneath his wing. He became like a big brother to me. Talk about that relationship and the things what does G-Mac mean to you?
Well, I mean, I'm going to just start with all those guys. You know, for me, it was G-Mac, Red, and what's his name?
Griff?
It was Griff. I'm sure it was Griff. Yeah, it was all of them. It was like, because me and Griff came in together. His first year of work, it was my first year in as a, you know, transfer. So we came in together. Red was kind of the main recruiter, but Red was also like that kind of big brother. And then G-Mac was the guy I worked out with. So it was like they all played a vital role in my development. Griff was kind of like the, all right, we don't got to talk about basketball. Like how he was, I always asked me, how was your day? Like, what's going on today? Blah, blah, blah. Ray was like the, we could talk about basketball. We could like say something funny. So like, and then G-Mac was kind of like the, we could talk about basketball, but they could also like, whatever, say something funny as well. So like, we all had a really good relationship. I miss seeing those guys every day. And then just working out with G-Mac was kind of like, yo, sometimes I hated it, bro. Like, I hated it. I used to hate waking up at 6 a.m. because I got a GMAC workout. But he just put so much love and so much into us, it was hard not to just give it back every time I worked out with him. And we built a good relationship, as friends now. And, I miss those guys. I miss all those guys.
The reason why I say G-Mac is just because, obviously, we worked out with G-Mac on the day-to-day basis. But, I mean, the coaching staff at Syracuse, Patty and I say this all the time. Like, I don't think you could get a better collection of guys, like actual human beings, to be around you every single day. Like, I remember I was going through a really tough part of the season last year. I was missing shots, and Red would just come to me and just give me a hug or just uplift me. Like, on other coaching staffs that I was a part of, it was such a basketball-driven relationship that there was no like giving you a hug after a game. It was just like, Why didn't you get that rebound? Why didn't you defend? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But with Reddit and all those guys, it was like our relationship was bigger than basketball, so I could trust them whatever they were trying to tell me.
I could also tell, like, from the aspect of a walk-on, like, they're not talking to me every day about playing time and, like, production and everything, but they're one of the only coaching staffs, like, you'll find that nothing is ever about them, which you can't say about a lot of people. Like, it's all about you guys. It's all about the kids. And, yeah. And, like, they don't expect or want any of the credit. And then, yeah, it's never, like, an us versus you thing, which you can't say about, like, a lot of coaching staff. So, I don't know.
And I think the beauty of it is that Coach Boeheim lets those guys do their thing, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the thing. Like, Coach Boeheim, you get yelled at by Coach Boeheim, it's like, all right, now you're going to get comforted by Ray. You're going to comfort by G-Mac. You're going to get comforted by Griff. Like, and now you're good. Like, you're not pissed no more. You're not, like, steaming, like, steam coming through your nose nowhere because you just got screamed at. So those guys are like the big brothers to me.
And they all play for Coach Boeheim too, so they know how it is. Like sometimes Coach Boeheim, especially when you're one of the best players, like he'll just say something to get it off his chest, and then like, but he still wants you to shoot the next 10 shots. You know what I mean? Like it's just,
always do that. He used to like, if I ever went to like a half like 5.5 points, he'd be like, Elijah, you're just not being
right
for that. Something like that, man.
Nah, for sure, man. And then obviously after Syracuse, you put your name in the draft. I mean, your name was hot at the time. It was probably the right time to go. But was there any thought about coming back to Syracuse?
I'm not going to lie, bro. Like, I kind of looked back at kind of year I had and I was like, yo, I gotta go. Like, I have to. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. I didn't really, my thing was, I didn't know about like COVID. Like, I didn't know what was gonna happen in the world. So I didn't know how things would be. So I was like, you know what? I'm hot. Like, COVID's coming. I'm just gonna be safe and just, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna stay. Cause I think from what I'm talking to people, like, I might have made a good choice by staying. But, you know, looking back now, I, you know, I'm glad at how everything worked out. I really am. But, like, I just miss it.
Definitely. Definitely. So.
I mean, you mentioned it there, but you're our first guest that was in that 2020 draft. So how weird was that day to day? And, like, was it just, like, kind of like you're trying to take it as it goes? Or like, when were you finding out that the draft's pushed back, that all that is like, just not
normal? Well, we had an 8 month, 8 or 9 month long pre-draft. Like, it was insane. So we get out of March Madness to the COVID, they shut it down, and the draft is in June. So, all right, everyone's like wherever they're at doing their pre-draft, like getting ready, but there's no like workouts. Like, you're not flying the teams to work out. They're coming to you. So you're essentially just where you're at the whole 8-9 months, because we're in a lockdown. So you got to work out. You got to kind of stay in shape. You got to get ready for the draft. In whatever conditions you can, or however way you can. And then it was like no summer league, no OTAs. Like, we went straight from the draft to training camp in a week. So it was just kind of like, it was hard. It was really hard adjusting the rookie year. Really hard.
So going into that draft night, what were you expecting? Was there any other teams that you were expecting? And then once you got that call from Utah, just explain that feeling.
Draft night, man, draft day, I was up early, I had a busy day just getting ready, and I was just so anxious. Like, I remember throwing up like 4 or 5 times that day. I was just super, super anxious. Yeah, I was nervous, I was scared, I was excited. It was so many emotions running through me. It was just like, this is the biggest day of my life. It's like, it's the day I've been won, it's the day I've done anything for. So I was really, really emotional and scared and nervous, but also excited and happy. Mm-hmm. So when we get to draft night, I'm gonna be honest with you, I thought I was gonna be a first round pick. I thought I was like gonna be a first round pick. So when it got to 28, I called my agent and I was kind of like, I'm just waiting. He's like, yeah, I don't know. It was just kind of his agent client talk. And then when I found out it was Utah, I knew it was Utah because my agent called me and told me, but I was kind of like, all right, I don't really know much about Utah. Like, I did. I didn't know much about the, like, they weren't like a high team that I thought was going to be in my, drafting me or wanting to be in a trade. So I didn't do kind of a lot of research. But then when I got there, I knew right away it was going to be one of the best teams in the NBA. Like, easily. And it was.
So going on that team, I mean, what was your expectation, right? This team was a win-now team. They didn't particularly need you. I mean, obviously they wanted you, they drafted you and signed you to a contract, but they didn't particularly need you. Talk about that year, like those 3 years in Utah and how you were able to grow from it. But at the same time, the frustration, the emotions that go into, obviously, an NBA season each and every year.
I mean, absolutely, bro. Going into it, I just wanted to hoop. Like, I just came off of averaging 20 points a game. Like, I'm playing with the ball. I'm doing whatever I want. I'm like, I just want to play. Like, I just want to play. And also with COVID, like, we didn't have a regular G League. Like, we had the G League bubble that year. So, like, it was hard for me to just ever hoop because the G League bubble wasn't until March. And then they just used me in the G League bubble so I can get ready to, because I was still rehabbing my ankle.
Yeah.
And, like, so it was just a lot. It was just messy. And it was a lot. My first year and a half, I'm gonna be honest, I learned how to play basketball. Like, I learned how to play like basketball, and I kind of got away from that at Syracuse because I just, not that I didn't know how to play basketball, but I had just so much freedom, you know, to take a bunch of shots, good within offense shots, but like just not shots I would take in the NBA. So I kind of like learned how to play. I took it as a learning experience. You know, I had 4 All-Stars, Defensive Player of the Year, 6-Man of the Year, runner-up 6-Man of the Year. Boyan shot almost 50-40-90 for his career. Mm-hmm. So I have all these dudes to learn from. Like, just I gotta see these guys work every single day and see what it takes to be really good at this game. So that's how I took it. But it was hard though, bro. It was really hard. I just wanted to play. Again, I'm living by myself in Utah. Like, it's really, really hard. Like, I just wanted to play basketball, and I missed it. But I'm happy where I am. I'm happy that things worked out the way they did, because you learn everywhere you go. Learn more about yourself.
Real quick, I mean, we don't take up too much more of your time. Again, we appreciate you coming on, but I had to ask this because I'm a giant Damian Lillard fan, and I know he was hurt last year, but Swider, a thing we've talked about a lot is him being around LeBron and AD and these guys that are super established. you've had the benefit of being on the same team. You just mentioned Donovan Mitchell and then Dame last year. How have you sort of like picked their brain and looked at how they work every day and kind of maybe like some habits that you've taken from them with how successful they've been?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm going to start with Don. Don is special because I've known Don for quite a long time. He's mm-hmm. from Westchester County. He's been around Westchester County. I'm Dutchess County, so, like, our names have crossed paths. Like, I've seen him play AU, vice versa, whatever. And so to know somebody that close to age as me, kind of from the same area in a sense as me, like, works so hard. Like, he's just a worker, bro. Mm-hmm. He's just a worker. It's, like, it's really cool to watch. Like, first one in the gym. When on shoot around, like before on a game day, like getting his hour, good hour in, like the way he takes care of his body. And he's like, this dude is so close to aging me, but he's so focused. Like he's just so focused. It's just every day how dialed in, and just no matter what, how dialed in he is, it's like, we the same age. Like, I gotta get there. I gotta get to that. I wanna get to that kind of level of dedication and commitment to myself. And I'm there. Like, I've learned that. But just like watching that, seeing that every day, seeing Dame, how he approaches, you know, he was kind of rehabbing when I was there.
Right.
But he still was just so professional every day, getting his work in every single day. And he encouraging us, like not for nothing, we were tanking that year. So like we mm-hmm. didn't, he didn't need to show up for any of our games. He didn't need to come watch any of us. Like that was the year that we kind of, thought about rebuilding the roster, like blah, blah, blah. So he still was showing up for us. He still was a good leader and just a good dude to have around. So I'm grateful I got to be on a lot of those mm-hmm. teams are two great, a lot of great players.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going into this season, obviously, you decided not to play summer league this past year, and then you joined the Wisconsin Herd. What went into that decision not to play summer league, and then what is your mindset going into this G League season and obviously making your way back to the NBA?
You know, I didn't think summer league would be beneficial for me just because of, I just didn't think it was a good idea because some of the you just never know. You never know if you're going to play, if you're not going to play. It's just – so I kind of didn't want to do that. And then, you know, when this opportunity came, I just wanted to take full advantage, you know. And I'm happy I'm here. I'm happy I'm playing. I'm just happy, bro. Like, I can't lie. I'm happy. I'm hooping. That's what it's all about.
That's what's up, man. Elijah, appreciate you, man. Actually, one more question, Patty. One more question.
Wait, I actually have a quick one more story too, but you go ahead.
Yeah, so, I'm chilling, bro.
Yeah.
So, I think I would say Patty says this before on the podcast that me and you were the most out. Like we talked the most about Syracuse basketball on our Twitter page.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Talk about that kind of affair that you have, love affair you have with the program, with the fan base. The Syracuse fans, and why are you so adamant about posting about the Syracuse?
Also, Elijah, you can be honest. You get a lot of love. You get a lot of clout on everyone. So are there any that you're just firing off just because you're like, I could use some retweets right now. Like, I think I might just – No, I'm kidding. All of them are obviously genuine, but
– Yeah. Bro, I just – like, that's how much I just love that place. I just want – like, I got so much love for that place as a community, as a school, like, basketball. I just love it. I love that place.
Mm-hmm. Swatter. Elijah's also you're a lowercase guy too with all the tweets.
Yeah, super
lowercase. Yeah, so Swatter, I think you might have to adopt that. It's way more casual, you know what I mean? But my last question is, I think every Syracuse fan and a lot of college basketball fans will remember when you guys beat Zion's Duke team at Cameron, and at the end of the first half you hit like a 70 footer. It was the if you haven't seen it, look it up. I heard a story last year. If this is correct, credit me. If this is wrong, then I'll blame the other person who told me. But I heard the next day of practice, Coach Boeheim said, Elijah, if you can hit this shot in the dome, practice is canceled for the day. And you shot it. Was it the first attempt?
It was.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was. So yeah, that's the same shot.
No credit to Ryan Bury there. That's my story.
only at Syracuse. Only at Syracuse.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah, most coaches too. But that's the other. Also, what we were saying, most coaches would be like, "Nah, I'm kidding. Like we're practicing." Bam. I was like, "Yeah, go home."
Yeah, I actually did cast that. I do remember that. That's crazy. I forgot about that actually.
Yeah, that's insane. We'll definitely post that shot too. But
that game was lit.
Yeah, that wasn't amazing. That was a full roster, too. Zion, RJ, all of them. Yeah.
Well, Cam was sick. That he warmed up, but he was sick. He didn't end up shooting up.
That was better for Duke.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Elijah, appreciate you coming on the pod, man. It's
absolutely great.
Always great talking to another Syracuse guy who's
absolutely
in the similar situation as me, man. So I'm sure I'll see you around. I don't know if we play you guys, but
I think we do. I was looking at the schedule. We play out in March. We play around my birthday.
All right, so take it easy on us, man.
Yeah.
Nah, man, but for real, thanks for coming on. And absolutely, obviously, bro. That was another great interview with
Thanks Elijah so much, Hughes. Bro. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys, man. Appreciate you guys having me on.